I'm Andy Kummel from Chemistry in the Moores Cancer Center, and this session is entitled Fresh Intellectual Perspectives. The first talk will be given by Stefan Tanaka on Reducing Unevenness, an Appeal for Horizontal Thinking. Thank you, Stefan.
I'd like to thank Kit and Sandy for inviting me and putting me on this, and it's kind of interesting being fresh because I'm an historian and I'm actually going to talk about the importance of the old. But what I'd like to do is the point of my talk would be that if we're going to deal with questions of justice, if we're going to deal with issues of innovation and change, we also have to think about how we ourselves change our own practices. And that's one of the things that we're trying to foster at the center of the humanities. You know, I don't use PowerPoint, so which one?
Okay.
Technologically. So technologically challenged, and what I'm about to start off with was digital media and technology is changing scholarship. That's my first line. The question is how. And We communicate with others with email, we have more databases, we now publish electronically, we communicate electronically. We have better search engines, we have better calculations. I mean, everybody has on our desk what 5 or 10 years ago was a supercomputer. And we have archives for the historian that's largely online now. I put this on the board, though, because what we've done is we're participating in a world where we're engaged, where the computer and the technology is helping us do more, do it faster, and do it better. And the question is to what extent does that change anything? And I'm invoking here David Levy, a computer scientist who used to be at Xerox PARC, and now at the University of Washington. And he points out, and many others have done this too, that what we've done is we've embraced the storage and the hypertext and the speed of the computers that Vannevar Bush mentioned in 1945. What we've not done, though, is the reason for this is Vannevar Bush was complaining about information overload and how we could use the computers to think about how we use the computers to help us deal with the mundane, so that frees us time to do what we would call the more creative and contemplative thinking. And so this is, you know, our dilemma, as I see it, is we at the university are largely in the mode still of the more faster and bigger. We're evaluated based upon innovation, on new research rather than existing research, we don't ask questions for whom, we don't ask questions about utility, we publish in a world into a gated community that limits the access of our research rather than makes it available for everybody. And this is historical. And it comes from the Enlightenment, it comes from the idea that time is linear, and it comes from also the rise of progress as a way of thinking. As I was preparing this speech, I couldn't help noting that the USC San Diego Radio School radio ad says, "Never stop advancing." And I agree with that, but a different thing would be never stop learning, which changes this part of the change that I'm talking about. Okay, and this is Michel Serres, who's a philosopher of science who talks about these kinds of issues. And the ultimate end of that, then, is it places all of us on a treadmill. And I think, I mean, as I talk to my colleagues today, I think a lot of us feel like we're churning, we're on treadmills, we keep producing stuff, and we don't have time to do the kinds of things that some of us would like to do. The point of all of this, then, is, or part of raising this, is that we have to think about time and temporality as not a universal linear thing, but that there is a technological time and temporality, and there are the temporalities of the human. And Jörg Simmel wrote this in 1900, and that's why I'm saying this is not fresh. This is a fairly old thing. So we have to think about then that humans are organized around different temporal scales. We have our biological times, we have our cycles, and we have our families, we have our personal times. I always like to say that my life is not linear, but my biography is, or my career is. And there's a difference there. They're related, but they overlap, but they should never be considered coeval, as if they're the same thing. And so the implication of this, then, that I'd like to draw on is that the way we think about change can lead to reinforcement of the existing system, more, bigger, better, solve certain kinds of problems, but it doesn't necessarily change things. And my favorite is a computer scientist who wrote in the 1980s, this is Rob Kling, that computers enhance the existing organization. So if your mode of organization is efficient, you become more efficient. If your mode of organization is disorganized, like my office, I become more disorganized. So my plea then is that we think about thinking and innovation change also in lateral terms. Craig McKenzie talked about the idea of the great idea coming to us all of a sudden is usually something that has germinated, that is maturing, and it comes from a whole network of individuals and ideas that are in the air and come together at a certain time, often through collaboration or discussions with other people. Psychologist Philip Tetlock argues, or has written a book, that experts are less likely to predict the future than those who know many little things and draw from an eclectic array of traditions rather than the experts. I'm not sure I agree with that or not, but nevertheless, it's provocative for all of us. David Edgerton, an historian, as we think about the nature of change, says, calling for innovation is paradoxically a common way of avoiding change when change is not wanted. And you could think about all the corporations that are calling for change and innovations when all they're trying to do is to maintain their own system. We have to think about usability. A lot of times usability is more important than the technology. There's the number of horses. Germany used more horses in the Russian advance, and of course they lost that, so maybe this was the problem. But then mechanized vehicles. They had about 500,000 horses. The other thing is cost effectiveness. And the Manhattan Project, this is the atomic bomb, cost $2 billion, and it destroyed part of Tokyo. 100,000 people were killed. It did not force the leaders. So the leaders did not decide, oh, they dropped an atomic bomb and we're going to surrender. There were other factors that were more important. And the U.S. Strategic Bombing Survey just after that said that 220 B-29 bombers carrying incendiary devices could have done the same amount of damage and for a lot less money. So what I'd like to just emphasize here then is that what the Center for Humanities has done is to try and foster people to talk across different disciplines, across different divisions, and to come up with, in a sense, risky or ideas that might pan out and they might not pan out. I'm impressed by Adam Burgasser because he's working with a media artist as well as a visual artist on that they call Project Planetaria. Mary Devereaux is looking at the importance of literature in both medical education as well as medical practices. I'm not going to talk about what we're trying to do is change the nature of scholarly publishing, where we no longer publish by the book, but we use digital media, and by opening that up, we produce in multimodal things. It changes the nature of historical scholarship. We have to think about audiences. And one of the things that, this is one of my favorites, I was at University of Seattle. This is where I started my graduate career. I didn't end up there. This is an incredible website that has had an impact on public policy laws in Seattle. It's used by all sorts of different people. And it's had 4 million hits. Now, that's a lot more than all of my research combined in terms of readership. Thank you very much.